Welcome to the Women on Fire podcast. We're on a mission to help you have your best menopause and rest of your life. I'm your host, Jenna Moore. I'm an accredited integrative health and menopause coach, and I've studied nutritional awareness, women's hormones through a functional medicine lens, and explored various modalities, including breathwork, mindset, and positive psychology. Join me and my guests as we discuss how to navigate the natural life transition of menopause and growing older. From waistlines, waning libidos, and what to wear now we're over 40, we discuss it all. Women on Fire is sponsored by MenoMe, a New Zealand-based company by women for women. MenoMe specialises in scientifically validated all-natural supplements so you can experience freedom in menopause. Today, my guest is the delightful Nikki Pellegrino. Nikki is a best-selling author in the UK, Australia, and New Zealand. She writes delicious novels, and they're set in Italy. And they're filled with food, friends, love. They tend to start women in midlife. And she's on to novel 15 now, I believe. But the friends in there are people that you would feel like you'd love to have as your friends, which is a bit like Nikki herself, really. She's well known for her wit and wisdom. She was born in Liverpool, and she has actually been based in New Zealand for 30 years after she visited and fell in love with her husband. But certainly if you wish to read one of her novels and you haven't yet, I'm warning you that they are addictive. You should do it on a full tummy and have your passport ready, because they'll have you wanting to book a flight to Italy immediately. As I say, Nikki's currently writing her 15th novel, but she took a bit of a side detour from those novels and wrote a book called Don't Sweat It, How to Make the Change a Good One, A Guide to Perimenopause and Menopause. After perimenopause crept up on her and she had no idea what was happening. So I'd love to talk to her about that today. Nikki's also a former editor. She's also a freelance writer, so she writes a lot about health. And because she's been in this game for a long time, she knows what she's doing. So the book tells us her own story, her own journey. It also interviews other women and people like endocrinologists and natural health specialists, etc. So it's very balanced. And as I say, it is laced with her well-known wit and wisdom. So I hope you enjoy. Hi, Nikki. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jenna.
It's lovely to see you after so long.
You haven't changed, Jenna. You look exactly the same.
Neither have you. So today we're going to talk about Nikki's books. And you are a prolific author. You've been really busy. Okay. So you specialise sort of in novels set in Italy, which are totally delightful, and I always tell people to read on a full tummy, which a lot of your reviews say too. And I think Good Housekeeping says they're a slice of sunshine. And in here, you sort of star midlife women now too, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Increasingly, I do. In fact, the first book that I did that in was called A Year at Hotel Gondola. And I'd really like to go back and rewrite that book, because I give my character a hot flush, but it was before I'd ever had one. Yeah, so I just went with what I found online. But actually, that is not what my experience of hot flushes was like at all. So now I feel like, oh, I'd like to go back and just rewrite the hot flush to make it more accurate. I hit 50 and I started to really think it's like another coming of age in life, really. I think midlife, you kind of have to think, okay, who do I want to be now? Who do I want to be as an elderly person, you know, and what do I need to do now to make sure I'm healthy and able to do the things I want to do then. So it was a real period of kind of reflection for me. And I think that came out in my novels because they're often about whatever it is I'm thinking about. And I think 50 was the moment where I really went, oh, I'm actually old. Like, I kind of hadn't realized I don't have kids. And I think kids are a real visual reminder of the passing of the years because they change. But, you know, I just peer into the mirror with good lighting and the same expression on my face. And I just felt like nothing had changed. And 50 was the, I say in the book that I suddenly noticed even my chin had aged. I was like, oh, look, I'm actually old now. Yeah. So all of that kind of came out in the books very naturally, you know, that. And also I wanted to write about middle-aged women because I think there was this idea that you're sort of in the autumn of your life and you're not going to have hopes and dreams and plans and adventures. And I'm pushing back against that idea because I don't think that it's how I feel, and lots of the women I know don't feel that way. So I kind of feel about our generation, are we Gen X? I never can work it out. We're just a bit different to the generations that went before. We've got higher expectations. We've had, you know, better educations often and better careers, more opportunities, and we're not about to just shuffle off into invisibility quite so easily.
So true, you know, and I mean, you wrote in there something about midlife being incredibly hard to define and that it changes you in ways you can never imagine.
Yeah, and I think, because when is midlife, you know? I mean, I would say we think of it as our 50s, but we're probably not going to live until we're 100. So it's even that. So yeah, so when I kind of made the jump from writing fiction to doing the nonfiction book about menopause, Don't Sweat It, a lot of the stuff that I've been thinking about for
which
my novel.
For those... Yeah. For those who can see, then Nikki wrote Don't Sweat It about menopause, right? So how did you, was it because you were going through this and you felt that women needed to be informed?
I think it was partly that I was going through it for so long and I didn't realise it was happening to me. So I had all these symptoms, you know, particularly I think those early symptoms like the mood swings and the rages. I was furious with everybody. And I went to the dentist at one point and he said, can you stop clenching your jaw because all your teeth are cracking? And I said, I can't stop. Everyone is really annoying me. And then he said to me, you've changed the shape of your face. And I actually have here, I've got these muscles that have kind of overdeveloped now. And so my rage has actually made me uglier, which is quite distressing. But I just thought people had become really annoying. It took me ages to realize I was the common denominator, and the weird itchiness I was having and the migraines and the not being able to sleep, you know, the 3 a.m. wake up when you're just so awake. You've never been more awake. It took me ages to realize that that was actually perimenopause. And completely normal, and lots of other women were going through the same thing. And it wasn't really until I started having hot flushes that I went, oh, hang on, this. And even the first hot flush, I remember I was at a book launch and I said to the woman standing next to me, oh, so stuffy in here. And she was like, no, Nikki, it isn't stuffy. And I said, oh, do you? And she said, yes. It's like, oh. So, and then I had these incredible palpitations before every hot flush, and I thought I'd damaged my heart with too much poor living. And then once I started researching the book, I realized all this stuff is really common and there just wasn't at that point a lot of information around it. I think there is loads more information now. People are doing podcasts and books and, you know, there has just been, which is fantastic. It's almost a bit difficult to get away from the information about being in midlife now. But certainly when I started to do the research, it was hard to find accurate information. There's a lot of people with a stake in it. You know, they want your money or they want your, yeah. So there was a lot of that. And then a lot of people with very firm views. There's some people that think HRT is the only answer. There's some people with some whole other idea. So navigating that to try and come up with the best possible information, whilst also making the book entertaining, because I don't write boring books. My novels aren't boring, I hope. So I didn't want this book to be boring. I wanted to make women laugh. And I also wanted to tackle stuff around, stuff that has been fueling my rage, like ageism and this idea that we are somehow a little bit embarrassing because we're middle-aged, you know, and I wanted to really push back against that. And also the pressure on us to look a certain way. Like I hate the idea of saying to women, you shouldn't be having Botox and you shouldn't have a facelift and you shouldn't dye your hair. All of that I think is wrong. But I also hate the idea that we can't look old and that old is ugly. And we need more role models, you know, that who are beautiful and old. There's not that many of them. We all looked at Maggie Smith, you know, and she did that handbag campaign recently and went amazing, amazing. But that's a real rarity. So, and don't we all want to be fabulous when we're older? We don't want to be boring, most of us, I don't think. So, well, that book was all of that packed into 60,000 words. It was quite hard work. And can I say, writing a book about the menopause when you are perimenopausal is probably a really bad idea, because some days I thought, of course I can do this. I've been a journalist for 30 or 40 years. You know, I've got all the experience. And other days I'd literally lie on the floor of my office and cry softly because it just seemed impossible. And it seemed like a massive mountain that I couldn't climb. And I didn't, and my confidence had just disappeared on me completely. Rather like my libido has. So yeah, it was really tough. It was a tough book. It was really difficult to write. And I have been hugely grateful for the feedback I've had from women saying what a difference it's made for them, because it kind of makes the suffering worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing though. And that's really good to hear. And thank you for doing that, because, you know, even I think it was only a few weeks ago, maybe it was a couple of months ago, and a woman asked me some questions about some symptoms she was having. I said, that sounds like perimenopause. And she goes, excuse my ignorance, but what is perimenopause?
Yeah.
And that was certainly me back in the day when I sort of sleepwalked into it, and it sounds like for you too. And yet we've been on the peripheral writing about health for years.
Yeah. Also, I was in my 50s. It shouldn't have come as a huge surprise to me. I didn't go through it. Like women who, you know, become menopausal in their late 30s and their early 40s, I can see it will come as a shock to them because it's not expected then. But it absolutely was expected to me. And yet still I managed. And I guess a part of it was that I didn't really want it to be happening to me, because it's been portrayed as such a negative way. So that was the other thing I really wanted to push back against, because I think that, you know, we've probably got a third of our life left to live. And Germaine Greer, in her book, her sort of seminal book about menopause, she called it the antechamber of death. And I was like, really, Germaine? I don't think so. So I wanted to push back against that. We've still got this huge amount of life ahead of us. And often women are in a position, their families have grown up, perhaps they've got a bit more financial security, in a position to actually make some choices for the first time after years and years of doing things because they had to. So when I talk to women, yes, there were women going through a really tough time. But often when I talk to women who are post-menopause, so obviously menopause is just kind of a moment. And once you've had your final period, then you are post-menopause. And once you get to, I'm probably 2 years post-menopause now, and I feel like everything has just settled again, mostly. There obviously are some changes. But the crazy rages have gone. Now when I get really angry with someone, it's because they've been exceptionally annoying, not just mildly irritating. And I guess in the book I say that when I was perimenopausal, I felt like I had imposter syndrome, except the person I was pretending to be was me. I kind of felt like I was trying to just act normally, but inside I didn't feel like me anymore. And I feel like me again. So kind of, I think that's one of the things I really want to get through to women, that it is a transition. It is a period of life. Some women do have long-lasting symptoms, but most women don't. You know, it can be a long time, but you come out the other end and actually everything just gets easier. I think my moods are more even. I can wear white trousers without fearing a great big bloody splodge on the back. I think I've got more energy, just generally feel better in lots of ways.
And something too, you were talking in your book about you, how you put on weight, but I saw you on Instagram because I follow you on Instagram and you're looking very slender. So did that drop off too?
No, it wasn't so much that I put on weight. It's like all the fat in my body got together for a party and didn't know the way home, so just settled in the wrong place. So my body shape has really changed. Like my breasts gone up a cup size. I just had to throw out all my bras because, and I went to the shop, I tried a bra on and I said to the assistant, do you think this is too small? And she was like, yes. But I said, how can that be? So it was more that my body changed shape. But actually, I am now making a concerted effort to lose a bit of weight because I think there's a lot of science around the fact that it's better to not gain weight post-menopause and your metabolism definitely changes. So I'm not starving myself. I love food, but I'm just eating more vegetables, more protein, not so many giant bowls of pasta and almond croissant. You know, just kind of perhaps not quite so much wine, because that's the other thing. Wine and coffee just don't really agree with me anymore. And they were like my best friends. You know, the only thing I drink apart from wine and coffee is water. So, so I think it's coming to grips with those things and deciding what your balance is. And I don't really want to give up the things that I love. So I will still have one or two coffees a day and I will still have a glass of wine in the evening, maybe two. If I have more than that, then I get that 3 a.m. wake up, which is the pits, right? Because that's when you lie there thinking, my life is a disaster and everything's going to go wrong. And, yeah. It's the worst time to be awake in the world.
That negative bias.
Yeah, because you're...
And did your libido come back?
Oh, no, sorry. That's gone missing. I keep waiting for that to come back. Do you know, I even went to the doctor and to get some Avestin to help, you know, things down below be a little bit more lubricated. And I haven't even opened the box. I just look at it and go, eh. But I will. Because I want to have sex. I want that libido to be there. But I don't know. It just disappeared one day. It was like a tap was switched off. And I honestly never expected that to happen. I always thought, like in my 60s, you know, I kind of thought, oh, you, if your relationship breaks up or something happens to your partner, I thought I'd be quite promiscuous. That was my plan. I read this great book called The Memoir of a Round Here Woman. It's by a woman who in her 60s just had all these wild affairs. And I was like, wow, that
is that right?
Yeah. And she's just wildly promiscuous and has a fantastic time. I thought, yeah, that could make your 60s quite entertaining. But now I'm like, no. So in the new year, I'm going to make an effort. And I mean, obviously there's a little bit of science around testosterone, but I am not a taker of things. Don't take HRT. You know, I take the odd paracetamol when I've got a headache, but I'm not a great fan of drugs or even supplements, to be honest. Occasionally I'll take them, but I'm just not very good at it. I'm a believer in lifestyle, good food, exercise, getting outdoors, staying mentally healthy, and, you know, making your whole lifestyle part of that. So I don't quite know. I'm going to have to do a bit more research into libido because maybe there's some lifestyle thing I could be doing to suddenly, you know, get my groove back. But whenever I talk about it, women just laugh because they're all thinking, I feel like that too, but I'm not going to admit to it. Not all women, but loads. So, I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? I'm not going to reproduce anymore. So I don't need my libido. I just quite like it.
And you spoke to a lot of women for your book, didn't you? Was there anything that really stood out for you from what they were saying, from their stories? I mean, everyone's different.
Yeah.
Was there a recurrent theme?
I think the individuality of the experience was one big theme, that no two women had the same experience and no two women had the same approach. You know, some women were doing the natural things, some women were doing hormones, and some women weren't doing anything. But the thing that I found most astonishing was the loss of confidence. How many women talked to me, and some of these women were in really high profile jobs, very successful all their lives. You know, they'd sort of raised families and worked full time and been superwomen. And they'd suddenly hit this point where their confidence went. And some of that, I guess it's kind of this perfect storm. You've got brain fog, you've got insomnia, your estrogen is roller coastering up and down. So one minute you feel one way, one minute you feel the next. So you can't really trust how you're going to be. And women, a lot of women talk to me about the confidence. A couple of women I know left their jobs. And I talk to women in different ways, sometimes formally, you know, I interviewed them, sometimes over a few drinks, and so they knew what it was about. But sometimes it was just a middle-aged woman I would happen upon, and then I'd just ask them all these questions just to kind of get, you know, because sometimes when you interview someone formally, they'll give you a certain response. And
yes,
that. And it came out over and over and over again, the loss of confidence. And last year I talked at the Auckland Writers Festival at a seminar about it and talked a lot about it's about menopause in the workplace. And I talked a lot about the loss of confidence. And afterwards, two women came up and said to me, we had to go out and have a little cry because it's so much how we've been feeling, and we've been feeling so isolated and alone. And so I guess what I think is so great about talking about it, and if you're, you know, the boss, you can't really say to your team, I've lost my confidence completely. They're all listening to you. So it is really difficult. You do need someone within your workplace that you can talk to, or a counsellor or a therapist or whatever works for you. But I think trying to soldier on alone isn't the answer. And so many of these women had been doing that. You know, even being able to really talk to a friend about it very honestly and saying, my confidence had gone. And in fact, when I wrote an article for a magazine about it, and the editor of the magazine said, oh yeah, I thought I had dementia because my brain fogs were so bad. Yeah, and she is a really smart, onto it woman. And you think, well, wow, if you felt like that, then so, you know, how many other women out there are feeling the same way? So I guess that was the biggest thing, really. I mean, for me, hot flushes are a big focus, but for me, they weren't the worst thing at all. Like, you're hot, then you're not hot. It's kind of annoying, but it's not as annoying as not being able to sleep and not being able to think and not being able to control your own moods. And those are the things that I think really impact on women's lives.
Yeah. Because I don't know how you wrote a book while you were experiencing this, because it can be quite debilitating, can't it?
Well, writing books is what I do. And I guess I've written lots of other books, and I could look at them and go, well, I wrote that one and finished it, so I'm going to get to the end of this one. But there were times when there were times when I really thought, why did I say I'd do this? But it's also fantastic to talk to all the women. And, you know, I talk to endocrinologists, I talk to natural health people, I talk to a whole panel of experts, as well as just women like me. And it was a really fantastic experience, and people were incredibly generous in what they shared. Some high profile women I talked to were very open about talking about their depression and loss of confidence and all these things that I was surprised, actually, that people were happy to talk about. So that was just great. I felt like we were part of a kind of movement, I guess. And I do feel like there is a movement.
I mean, it started in the UK like several years ago, and now, you know, it took about 5 years to come down under, I think, and now in the US, Halle Berry's actually just got involved with, they're putting towards to Congress to put through a bill for education and research. Amazing.
Yeah, because so many drugs aren't tested on women. So much women are excluded so much, and there's so little knowledge. They don't even really know why we flush. They know the area of the brain that's involved, and they understand that it's the estrogen, you know, changing, but they don't know why. And you go, well, that is ridiculous. 50% of the world's population is going to do this at some point. How can we not understand why? And I know there's new drugs being developed and new medications, but always seems to come from a pharmaceutical standpoint because the pharmaceutical industry's got the money. And I wonder if there's better ways for those of us that don't want to take lots of drugs and perhaps would like to approach it in a different way?
Well, that's what we do, or I do. We kind of look for evidence-based botanicals that help with that. And there is botanicals there, but the thing is with it, with any of this, there's no one-size-fits-all. Yeah. So you've got to find what works for you. It's a bit like food, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's so much trial and error involved. And that involves expense, right? You buy an expensive supplement, you take it for 2 months, it has no effect. That's a bit discouraging, really. And one of the people I talked to for the book, Jessica Gilgen-Brown, who's a medical herbalist, she said what you need in the early perimenopause might not be what you need later on, because this, it's, you know, it's a change. Things are completely changing the whole time. So
I don't think people realise that, like, there's early perimenopause, late perimenopause, menopause moment in time, as you said, and then early postmenopause and late postmenopause.
Yeah.
So it's a lot, right?
It's a lot. It's a lot of stages. And one woman said to me, well, can I have a roadmap for what I should do? I said, well, I wish I could give you one, but no, because your body's not the same as mine and what you will need is different. So I guess it comes down to self-care, and that is something where a lot of women have not really invested a lot of time in, because they've been busy looking after everybody else. And I think midlife is a time when you really have to sit down and think, how can I care for me? Because, you know, we're losing the protective effect of those hormones. So if we're not careful, our bones will get weaker, our hearts will be unhealthier, our brains will be unhealthier. So we really need to think about all of that and what we're prepared to do in a sustainable way. Because you could literally spend all day, you know, self-caring. And who's got time for that? I still have to work. But for me, just making sure I go for a walk every morning and get outdoors, making sure that I connect with my friends. I really hated lockdown because I think it's really important. I work from home. Just going to see your friends, laughing with your friends. I just saw a piece of research that said children laugh 400 times a day and adults only laugh 15. So I'm trying to laugh more now because I think that's yeah, that sounds healthy, right? We should all be laughing more. It's great. It gets you going. So lots of stuff around that. And for me, also just keeping track of my mental health. So because I've been depressed over the years, and generally it happens when I let life overwhelm me, when I take on too much. So keeping track of that and recognizing the signs and going, whoa, actually, no, I can't do all of these things. And turning stuff down and saying no, which as a freelancer is really hard, because then you think, what if no one offers me any more work? And, you know, what if I say no to this opportunity and no more opportunities come along? But I can't do it all. None of us can. So, yeah. And I'm not really prolific. You know, you said I was a prolific author. I've written a lot of books. My 15th novel comes out next year. I spend a lot. 15, I know. Ridiculous. But I spend a lot of time doing it. I don't just sit down. I think it was Barbara Cartland who just lay on a chaise longue and spoke her books aloud while sipping a champagne cocktail. That's not how it works for me. There's a lot of time sitting here in my office, you know, only exercising my fingertips and my brain. So I have to, for me, I have to make sure that there's lots of other good stuff in life, and I do catch up with a friend for a walk or whatever, a glass of wine or whatever. And connect. Otherwise,
and you have to go to Italy to research as well.
I do have to go to Italy to research. Yeah, I do. I obviously didn't when the borders were closed, and I really felt that. I really felt the lack of being able to go and get that inspiration. And for me, place is a really important part of a novel, and I need to go to the place. And if I don't, I can't just Google it. But I have been back, and I'm going back next year. Actually, I'm going to take a tour to Sicily, a small.
Oh, that'll be amazing.
Yeah, I've just got a few more places. So hopefully I'll fill those in the new year, and then we'll be heading to Sicily in May and kind of revisiting some of the places of one of my books that was set there, and taking cooking classes in the cook school that I feature in the novel. So it'll be really cool. So yeah,
that'll be amazing.
It is a peck of the
I'll put those links in the show notes.
Okay, yeah, it's on my website. There's a little tour section on my website. So it'd be great if you could.
Oh, that'll be so exciting. How many people are you taking?
12, maximum of 12. Yeah. And then if it's good and it works out, then I'll try and do it again the following year and maybe choose a different location, see how it goes. Yeah.
And when's your book coming out next year?
September. It's called Marry Me in Italy, but it's actually a novel about single positivity. So I'm not really...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a story about being in a relationship for a long time, single positivity. It's about two very different women who don't want the same thing in life at all. Because I'm really more and more interested in the differences between us. You know, we just imagine everyone's the same and we're not. And I like the idea that we can be friends with people who aren't the same as us and don't have the same opinions and thoughts and hopes and dreams. And we can, you know, cope with those differences. So that's what the book's about. But it's also about Italy and food and friendship and family and all those things.
Always about Italy, hey? Because your latest one that's out at the moment, P.S. Come to Italy, that was lovely, a lovely love story. This one, Tiny Pieces of Us, when did that come out?
That came out in 2020, which was a terrible time for a book to come out because the bookshops weren't open for a lot of the time. And it was, yeah, it was, and it was a shame because it's a little bit different to my
That's
other
what
book.
I'm just going to say. It reminded me a bit more of Jojo Moyes, who actually writes comments on your books, doesn't she?
Yeah.
But, it reminded me of a Jojo Moyes book.
Yeah, it's about a woman who's had an organ transplant. And it is a bit grittier. It does have a little bit of Italy in it, but not as much. So, yeah, I guess it's good to do new things. And, you know, that's why I did the Don't Sweat It, the menopause book, because I think it's great to challenge yourself and do new things. Just don't challenge yourself too much.
Yeah, because you got to love a challenge, don't you, Nikki? So what do you wish you'd known before you went into perimenopause? Is there something that you just wish that you were just better informed?
Yeah, I really wish I'd known what was happening to me when it was happening. And because I think there's a lot of stuff I could have done. Like, for instance, a lot of people I know at the moment are doing meditation apps, you know, and I think meditation and mindfulness would have really helped me in those terrible mood swingy times. I finally went to the doctor and said, I can't sleep and I need to do something. And I wish I'd done that ages before. So she gave me some melatonin, which is really hard to get in New Zealand. You know, it's prescription medication. Lots of women I spoke to were just bringing it in from overseas websites, which is illegal. So they're scoring illegal drugs on the internet. So they sleep. And I think it should not be a prescription medication. We should just be able to buy it in a health food store like they can in other countries, because it's just a hormone. It's not that powerful. But it did help me a little bit. So yeah, I just wish I'd kind of realized what was happening to me and put more things in place for myself, rather than just sort of trying to soldier on through it. I don't honestly think I'd have ever taken HRT. I think I did consider it. I kind of made a pros and cons list. I think everything in life, you know, you have to weigh up risks and benefits. And I just decided in the end that it wasn't for me, not to say that other women, it's not for them. But I don't think I'd have done that any differently. But I just think it would have been an easier time if I'd recognised what was happening. And even the migraines, you know, that even when they kind of hit, I was just like, oh, this is a bit weird. Because I had the whole not being able to see properly and I was like, have I had a stroke? What's going on? So I think, right, you know, information is power and educate yourselves. And I just wish I had been more educated. And for someone that writes about health, it was disgraceful that I didn't educate myself better. And it was purely because it was purely an ageist thing. I didn't want to admit it was happening to me because then I'd be old and I didn't want to be old. So I'm really changing my attitude around that now. And I'm starting to see old as positive, you know, and really pushing back against ageism. And you get it all the time. The wokest people are still ageist. It's really interesting. So I'm there pushing back, using my postmenopausal rage to Tell them. Yeah, you Good know, on give you. Them, set them right.
There's some extraordinary menopausal women out there in the world.
I know, right? Today. Running companies and nations, and there really are, and certainly a lot of those women who were famous when we were growing up, they're now menopausal now, like Halle Berry,
exactly,
Meryl Streep, all those sorts of people. They're out there. So, there's a quote. I quote a comedian in the book. I can't remember her name because, of course, brain fog. She says menopause is a bit like puberty, but without all that life ahead of you. And I think that's one of the really important things. It's a hormonal shift like puberty, but it's more crucial in a way because you're not right at the beginning. You're at a point where you've got to decide absolutely what you want to do with the next few years, because this is your, this is your chance. If you always wanted to go to Paris and you've never been, this is your time to find a way to make it happen. And so I think it's just an interesting life stage. It's an interesting kind of coming of age. And it's a
coming of age. Yeah.
It's an opportunity.
I was going to say, sorry.
No, sorry. Carry on.
No, you carry on.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an opportunity. It's so often painted as, this terrible time in your life when your face will grow hairier and your face will grow wrinklier and your boobs will sag under your armpits. And I think there's too much focus on that and not enough focus on the good stuff about it and the things that the way you can reinvent yourself, except this is your time, not your children's time, not your husband's time.
And the wisdom, I think, the wisdom and experience. Because I was going to ask you what you would suggest if you were talking to a woman in perimenopause or about to go into perimenopause. And then I was going to ask you what you would suggest to a woman in postmenopause or about to go into postmenopause. But I think a lot of what you've just said is really good.
Yeah, I would say for both women, both sets of women, educate yourself. But the other thing I would say is there's this push at the moment from the UK, there's a particular menopause doctor, there's this push to say HRT is the only answer. If you don't take it, your bones will crumble and your hearts will fail and your brain will become demented. And that is not true. HRT is definitely helping some women. But there is, we've all got this desire for a miracle pill. And in fact, there isn't a miracle pill. What there is preventative lifestyle medicine. And there's so many other ways you can do it without feeling that you've got to follow this. It's almost like the pendulum has swung too far in the wrong direction, really, with this attitude that, practically should be in our drinking water to be taking these hormones. And the idea that you're hormone deficient, it's not a deficiency, it's a natural thing, or that you can balance your hormone. We still have estrogen, just a lot less of it, and not a very potent form. But it hasn't gone completely because our adrenal glands and our body tissue is still churning a bit of it out. So, so it's just this kind of idea that we're deficient and somehow dysfunctional and not well. Makes me quite angry because, as you say, there's women in their 50s and 60s doing incredible things, and without needing.
And it's wonderful to see. Although I did, there was a statistic you quoted in your book that was saying that there was a survey done on people in the workplace, and that there was a real issue that began around the 50 to 53 mark with ageism.
Yeah, and I think workplaces are really, really starting to change around this. A lot of them have started to have things like menopause policies, because there was always a maternity leave policy. There was a recognition that women would at some point decide to have babies, but it wasn't recognized that they were going to go through this other life stage that might require some mention. And that's increasingly happening. I think probably the big corporates is where it's happening at the moment. And I certainly have spoken to, you know, women in things like healthcare who have to wear a mask and all those clothes and they're having a hot flush. And I talked to this one woman and she was a teacher and she was masked during the pandemic, teaching in a classroom. And she became so dehydrated because it was summer and she was having hot flushes and she couldn't drink. She had a mask on. So it is very individual. You can't say to everybody your workplace should be doing A, B, C and D, but definitely there is more of an understanding. And I think that will hopefully increase.
Yeah, I think it will. And I think it's wonderful. And it's women's voices and people like you writing books like these and people talking about it that changes it, you know. I mean, we did that with breast cancer, didn't we?
Yeah. Breast cancer, you know, I mean, breast cancer had terrible survival rates and that has been turned around so much by the campaigning and by the work and research that's been done. So really, hopefully, in 20 or 30 years, those women that go through perimenopause, they'll be sorted, they'll know what's coming, they'll have some ideas about what they can do to help themselves through the transition. They won't stumble through it like I did, going, why am I so...
And I did. I love it. My stepdaughter is not going to have to. She's actually really interested. You know, she follows me. She wants to know. She's 28 years old. So I think that's a great thing. I have one last question for you, which is taking us back to Italy. I think I told you this when you first started writing your novels. I am totally in awe. I mean, I'm a writer. Okay, which I think is quite a different thing now we have this digital world because there's writing on paper, isn't there? And then there's digital writing and there's different rules now. Like, you know, digital writing isn't literary, I don't think. And I have written a book, as you know, but that was, not a novel fiction. And totally in awe of how you weave and tell the stories. And so many people / women dream of doing that, don't they? Yeah. Like if you say to someone, you're a writer, they go, oh, wow, I'd love to do that. But I think a lot of midlife women dream of doing that. And which brings us back to the age thing, maybe more freedom. The kids have left the nest, hopefully in some cases more financial freedom. So what would you suggest to women that is their dream?
I would say decide what you want to write, and what you write should be what you love to read. You know, sometimes people will say, I'm going to write a Mills and Boone because I'll make loads of money. But you shouldn't do that unless you like reading Mills and Boones, because I think you have to have a passion for the kind of book you're writing. And then I would say read loads of them. And it's just a matter of starting. The thing with a novel is it's 80,000 to 200,000 words. That's a lot. And it takes a long time. And you just kind of have to chip away at it. You can't look at the whole thing. You just have to think, well, okay, today I'm going to write 500 words and just slowly, or 200 words. Or, you know, who is it? There's a writer called Pip Williams that I interviewed, and she said her target is just to write one word. And she said, so then she never fails. She always manages to write one word, and usually more than that, but she never goes away from her writing with an I failed feeling, which is good. And then when you've written your book and you've gone over it and polished it, if you really would like to either self-publish it or, you know, try and get a publisher, find a good editor to look at it or a manuscript assessor, because you can't work on something all on your own for a whole year and have it. It's not perfect. You know, that's just like the first bit where you're at the end is still just a stage in the process. And there's lots of rewriting and polishing and thinking about the characters and fixing things that went wrong halfway through. Once I had a lunchtime that lasted like about 4 days, and my husband actually spotted it. He was reading the proof of the book and he said, she's doing this and it's lunchtime. And then all these other things happen, but it's still lunchtime. I was like, ooh. That's not ideal. So yeah, little things like that you need an editor to kind of pick up. And it is really hard. I think it's the hardest thing I do, really. But so sometimes I think to myself, why am I doing this? This is so difficult. I need to find an easier way to live my life. But then it's also probably the most satisfying thing. And there's no feeling quite like, you know, your book coming out. And often I will hear from readers and they'll say, I read your latest novel and I was having a real stressful time at work, or I'd been sick, or, you know, my parents were ill, and it just took me away from everything that was happening. And thank you so much for giving me that escape. And I kind of think, yay, that's my job. That's my job to do that, to kind of just take people out of their lives for a little brief holiday without needing to go far, and give them that sort of break from everything that's going on. The world is a big scary place right now. We all need a bit of a break from that. So yeah, I think it's worthwhile doing from that point of view. But it's like everything, you know, I can't sing. I would love to be able to sing, and I just really can't. It would be very distressing for all those around me if I tried. Some people are going to find they're just not that great at writing, and that's fine. That maybe they're great at painting or singing or something else. But I think it's really great to find a way to be creativity. And that might be creativity, might be planting a garden, or, I don't know, having indoor plants, but in creating a beautiful indoor environment. But just finding ways to introduce creativity in your life is another thing I think that's really good for you, particularly in midlife. You know, it's great for your brains. So if writing isn't, if it's not giving you any pleasure, I'd say stop and find something else that's more fun.
Yeah, yeah, good advice. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. How can people find you?
Oh, I'm just on all the things. Yeah, I've got a website, which is just www.nikkipellegrino.com. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook, not so much on Twitter now, I've gone off that. But yeah, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all the things really. So I'm easily found, Jenna.
And in all good bookstores.
And in all good bookstores, yes.
And on Amazon, I suppose.
Yeah, all the books are on Amazon. And Mighty Ape, which is the New Zealand one. It's good to support the New Zealand retailer. So, yes. Let's keep